chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you say it coming, and no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Rest make to have in the middle of it. Rest make to have in the middle. We are rest make to have.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness, we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. Got quite a bit going on this week. Judge Jackson was approved by the Senate. And, Mitt Romney and all those people, they went ahead and voted for her. And she should have never been approved whatsoever. But Greg Reese had this to say about some of her voting records. Some of the, were very cloudy, especially due with pedophilia type of charges or, sex tapes and videos and so forth. Child pornography, in other words. But here's Greg setting that up. Greg Reese.
Meet your new Supreme Court judge, Ketanji Jackson. In every single case involving child pornography, Judge Ketanji Jackson has been lenient and openly sympathetic with the perpetrators of child rape pornography. Christopher Michael Downs openly bragged about molesting his 13-year-old cousin. He was arrested for trading videos of child rape, including children as young as 2 years old. Judge Jackson gave him the absolute bare minimum sentence. Ryan Manning Cooper was arrested for having more than 600 images involving the rape and torture of children, including infants and toddlers, which is why the prosecutors made it clear that the case was on the more egregious or extreme spectrum. But Judge Jackson disagreed and ruled that distributing images of infants and toddlers being raped is not especially egregious. Wesley Keith Hawkins posted videos of 11-year-old boys being raped by men. Jackson only gave him 3 months, sent him to a low-security prison, arranged for special protections, and apologized to him, telling him that she feels so sorry for him and his family and for the anguish that this has caused all of them. In explaining her light sentence, Judge Jackson argued for the child pornographer's future potential. 6 years later, he was arrested again for distributing child rape porn, and Jackson resentenced him to only 6 months in a residential reentry center. Neil Alexander Stewart was arrested with hundreds of images and videos of child rape while trying to procure children between the ages of 5 and 11 to rape them. Judge Jackson admitted that the felon was likely to reoffend, but still gave a light sentence, arguing that the current recommendations for child sex offenders is outdated and substantially flawed. 3 years later, Stewart reoffended. This is how Judge Jackson got her start. In 2009, President Obama nominated her to vice chair the U.S. Sentencing Commission, where she helped weaken federal sentencing policy for child pornographers by arguing that child pornographers are not pedophiles. Which is similar to how Hillary Clinton got her start when she defended a group of men who violently gang-raped a child and later joked how she knew they were guilty. It's also very interesting that when the biggest pedophile scandal in history broke, Judge Jackson was there. After WikiLeaks released the Podesta emails, millions of people were asking questions about a strange coded language being used between President Obama, Hillary Clinton, and their friends. A code that seemed to reflect what the FBI says is secret code for pedophiles. The whole sordid mess became known as Pizzagate, and when the feds' cleanup operation ended up in the courts, Judge Ketanji Jackson was there to help tidy it all up. I'm sure this is all just a coincidence. Just like it was a coincidence that the world's most infamous pedophile blackmail artist killed himself in jail while the guards were surfing the internet. And just like it's a coincidence that Congress has paid out millions of dollars in court settlements that involve sexual assault. In some parallel universe, there may be an Earth that protects its children from pedophiles and other child predators. But not this one. On this Earth, we pay them taxes and sacrifice our children to them. Reporting for InfoWars, this is Greg Reese.
Coming up next is, Greg Reese says it like it is. You can't get any better than that. Wayne Allen Root lays it on the line about all these trainees and indoctrinating our young children with all this sexuality and all that. And also he says stuff about let's boycott Disney and these other corporations. So here's Wayne Allen Root laying it on the line about all these trainees and this sexual identities and gender changes and things like that. This country's disgusting at times. Here we go next.
You can be what you want to be. This person can be whoever they want to be, strange, weird, to normal people, but you have no right to take my taxpayer money and have a sex change operation in the military or in prison. No taxpayer dollars should ever be spent because a person's mixed up and confused what their sexual identity is. So I'm not anti-gay. I'm anti all of that, which is ridiculous. Now along comes this new stuff that I had no idea. That our children were being groomed in kindergarten, first grade, second grade, and third grade. Groomed, literally, to be gay, to be lesbian, to be transgender, to change their sexual identity, and to think that's a good thing. And I don't believe there's very many parents in America who approve of that, liberal or conservative. I think the Virginia election proved that. All the mama bears came out, and they elected the Republican governor of Virginia that no one thought was possible. No one thought it was even possible. Virginia's become not purple, but a blue state. But yet it turned big time red. They elected a Republican governor and an all-Republican legislature over the issues of critical race theory in school, school closures for COVID, masks in school, vaccines in school, and transgender sexual identity education taught in school. All of that led to all the mothers of Virginia switching to the Republican Party. So if Democrats want to make this their hill to die on, as the saying goes, famous saying, and I'm not talking about violence here, I'm not talking about murdering anybody, please don't misconstrue my words. A hill to die on is one of the most famous sayings in history. And if Democrats want to make this issue their hill to die on, I'm talking about the political party's death, I'm talking about their campaigns being destroyed, then you make it the hill to die on. I'm all for it. I'm cheering you. I'm going to high-five you. It's great. Make it the hill to die on. Make it the centerpiece issue of the Democrat Party. But other than that, all is good. Guest hosting today for Alex Jones. Lots of things to talk about. First of all, let me mention, for those of you who don't know me, my website is rootforamerica.com. Rootforamerica.com. And you can always email me, WayneRoot@gmail.com. My national radio show is Wayne Allen Root Raw and Unfiltered every single afternoon, Monday through Friday, 3 hours a night, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 Pacific Time, 5 to 8 Central Time on USA Radio Network. And you can find it all at usaradio.com or at my website, rootforamerica.com. Let me run through the biggest stories of the day that I think have the most importance to all of you. Just turning some lights off here. There we go. All right. So the biggest stories of the day that I think have importance to all of you. Number one, there's a Hunter Biden grand jury going on, and the witness was asked about a deal with the big guy, Joe Biden. And so for the first time, Joe Biden's name has come up in a criminal investigation, an official grand jury criminal investigation. Don't forget, Hunter Biden has come up, his name, in all of the media stories, the New York Times, Washington Post, over the last month. For the first time ever, there was an admission that the Hunter Biden laptop is real. And I was literally banned for life from Twitter because I brought up Hunter Biden's laptop and the stolen election. And the censorship and the banning and the book burning of liberals trying to destroy us all. And Twitter confirmed that I'm right by banning me for life. And it turned out everything I said was right. Matter of fact, there were three things I brought up that I felt led to my banning for life from Twitter. Number one, the election was rigged and stolen in 2020. Number two, Hunter Biden's laptop was covered up. And number three, lockdowns are massive failures and did not work in 2020 against COVID. And all three resulted in suspensions of me by Twitter, and eventually they banned me for life. So no question in my mind, I was right on all three, proven right on all three. But the big news story is Joe Biden's being brought up. Why? Why is the Hunter Biden laptop finally being acknowledged as real a year and a half after the election? Why is Joe Biden's name being brought into a criminal investigation? Well, number one, because it's all true. And number two, because for the first time, the liberal left is realizing that Joe Biden's leading them to a massive defeat. I mean, a landslide massive defeat. So they're looking to get rid of Joe Biden. And the first guy in the country said that was me. Months ago, I said, Joe Biden's gone. I made a guess that maybe Hillary Clinton would be the one to somehow replace him. I'm not sure how they're going to do it, but they're going to replace Joe Biden and Kamala, because Kamala is the most hated human being in the history of the world. Everybody knows that she's unqualified for the presidency, incompetent, incredibly not bright. I wanted to say stupid, but I'll try and be nice and just say not a very bright person, and that she is just disliked by everyone. I don't know why it took them till now to figure it out. She's black, a half black, half Indian, and yet in the Democrat primary, where blacks make up a huge portion of the electorate, she got no black votes and had to drop out before the first primary. She was completely disliked by black Democrat voters. So why anyone thought she'd make a good VP, I have no idea. But the end result is, if the media is on your side, they can lie about anything and everything. So they're finally acknowledging Hunter and Joe Biden for a specific reason. And Hunter Biden's laptop for a specific reason. Hunter Biden's corruption and Joe Biden being the big guy. They got to get rid of Joe Biden. They got to bury Joe Biden. They got to throw Grandpa from the train or the plane. Was that the Sly Stallone movie that was a big bomb about 30 years ago, Throw Grandpa from the Train, I think it was. And so I'm telling you, Joe Biden needs to be thrown under the bus. If they have any chance at surviving the midterms and after that, any chance at winning in 2024, the whole country's arrayed against the Democrat Party now. They've got to get rid of Biden, and they've got to somehow figure out the game plan to replace him and his vice president, because Kamala's incompetent and hated even more than Biden. All right, we're heading out for a break. When I get back, I've got a commentary called Defund Disney. I'll bet you can't wait. Defund Disney when we get back. All right, we're back. Wayne on the Roof for Alex Jones. We jumped in so quickly in segment one. I was in the process of just getting ready. Now I'm settled in. Now I know what I've got to talk about. So I wanted to jump to Disney. Jump for the big story about Joe Biden being the big guy and the end of the Joe Biden administration. It's coming fast. Fast and furious, as the movie says. They've got to get rid of Joe Biden. But let's jump to Disney, because I've never in my life seen anything like this. You know, I've never been an anti-gay guy. I've always been a live and let live guy. I've been a lifelong Republican conservative, but with libertarian leanings on some social issues. And as an example, I was the Libertarian vice presidential nominee in 2008. So some of you may not know it, but I was on the ticket in 2008 when McCain ran against Obama. It was Bob Barr and Wayne Allyn Root, and that's me. And when it comes to gay issues, I'm not pro-gay, I'm not anti-gay. I just say, live and let live. You want to be gay? Be gay. You want to be lesbian? Be lesbian. You want to be transsexual? It's weird. It's strange. It's confused. I think it's mental illness. But if you want to be it. You just changed my screen. So there we go. There we go. It's back. Now I can see what I'm looking at. So, okay. You want to be transsexual? Be transsexual. But number one, if it affects me, it's a different story. If it doesn't affect me, if you're gay in your bedroom, I don't see it, I don't care, none of my business. But you have no right. First of all, I've always argued about transsexual issues. You have no right to stuff men down my throat in a women's bathroom. No right to stuff men down little girls' throats in a locker room setting, in a sports setting, on a field trip setting. Men can't be women. Little boys can't be girls. And hang out with my daughters. And you have no right to take little girls' scholarships away and trophies away when boys start playing girls' sports. All of that is nuts. Number two, you have no right to stuff transgenders down the military's throat. You have no right to say transgenders should be in the military, because if they're in the military, the reason why isn't because they're brave heroes. It's because They want free transgender surgery. Sex change surgery costs $100,000 to $150,000. Look at your screen. Aren't you proud of that? There's your military dollars in action. But here's the deal. You can be what you want to be. This person can be whoever they want to be. Strange, weird to normal people. But you have no right to take my taxpayer money and have a sex change operation in the military or in prison. No taxpayer dollars should ever be spent because a person's mixed up and confused what their sexual identity is. So I'm not anti-gay. I'm anti all of that, which is ridiculous. Now along comes this new stuff that I had no idea, that our children were being groomed in kindergarten, first grade, second grade, and third grade. Groomed, literally, to be gay, to be lesbian, to be transgender, to change their sexual identity, and to think that's a good thing. And I don't believe there's very many parents in America who approve of that, liberal or conservative. I think the Virginia election proved that. All the mama bears came out, and they elected the Republican governor of Virginia that no one thought was possible. No one thought it was even possible. Virginia's become not purple, but a blue state. But yet it turned big time red. They elected a Republican governor and an all-Republican legislature over the issues of critical race theory in school, school closures for COVID, masks in school, vaccines in school, and transgender sexual identity education taught in school. All of that led to all the mothers of Virginia switching to the Republican Party. So if Democrats want to make this their hill to die on, as the saying goes, famous saying, and I'm not talking about violence here. I'm not talking about murdering anybody. Please don't misconstrue my words. A hill to die on is one of the most famous sayings in history. And if Democrats want to make this issue their hill to die on, I'm talking about the political party's death. I'm talking about their campaigns being destroyed. Then you make it the hill to die on. I'm all for it. I'm cheering you. I'm going to high-five you. It's great. Make it the hill to die on. Make it the centerpiece issue of the Democrat Party that transsexuality, transgender identity, changing your sexual identification, gay and lesbian education from kindergarten through third grade should be taught in all the schools. You do that, and you watch what happens in November. You're going to lose all 50 states. You're not going to lose 50, 60 seats in a House landslide. You're going to lose 80 to 100 seats in a House landslide. You're going to lose the Senate by 10 seats. You're going to be slaughtered politically, destroyed, demolished, the end of the Democrat Party. Because American parents don't support this kind of mental illness. They don't support grooming and brainwashing their children. And so shocking to me was Disney deciding to get involved in this thing. And it's interesting because I wrote a book, The Great Patriot Protest and Boycott Book, that identifies all the companies in America that take our dollars as conservatives, patriots, Christians, people who love this country and American exceptionalism. They take our dollars, they get rich, their stocks go up, they make a lot of money, everybody gets rich on us, and then they spit in our faces. And I identified 116 woke companies that do that, and Disney was right at the top of the list. And I gave you the phone number and the names of Disney CEO and chairman of the board and board of directors, and I give you their email, their phone number, their social media sites, and their physical address for snail mail to go after them, to let them know we're going to boycott them, never buy from them again, and put them out of business with their sick, mentally ill political views. And Disney's right at the top of the list. So please check out my book, Great Patriot Protest and Boycott Book. It's the perfect book for the perfect time to defund Disney.
When Alan Root says it like it is, and boy, I tell you. Anyway, coming up next is Jay Dyer. He's going to pick up what he left off last week on Bertrand Russell. Bertrand Russell wrote a book called The Impact of Science on Society. The Impact of Science on Society was the name. And he goes through, and Bertrand Russell lays it out like, we just got to get rid of a lot of people, and we've got to take Russia down, you know, and so forth and so on. And the plan is just working out like they've said. So here we go with Jay Dyer, and he lays it out. And I'm going to put up that book. I'm going to find that book and put it up on my site, thesecrettruth.com. thesecrettruth.com. That's my site on the web. And so come in there and find all that on the web. Okay, thank you. Here we go with Jay Dyer.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm your guest host, Jay Dyer of jaysanalysis.com. You know, last week we had a really in-depth talk about Bertrand Russell's book, The Scientific Outlook. And I mentioned a couple times in that talk another pretty wild text that he wrote a few decades later called The Impact of Science on Society. And since we haven't lectured through that entire book, I thought we would just go ahead and point out that his views didn't change over the next 20 years. And in fact, he took an even more radical stance, if you can believe it. I mean, I know he on the last through that it was pretty wild. It was pretty crazy. But where did he end up years later after World War II? What did he think would be the, quote, impact of science on society be? What would it be? Well, remember that we saw last week that Russell is a proponent of scientism. Scientism is a faith-based worldview where we have no real proof of the external world, the scientific method, of all these philosophy principles that underlie science. But we're going to ignore all that and just do science for the sake of science in the sense of will to power. Now, this is odd because Russell presented himself as an advocate of liberalism, as an advocate of democracy. But if you don't know, the Royal Society had, as we said last week, a front, a kind of cover group that was the Fabian Socialists, who presented a liberal democratic face to the people. Meanwhile, in the background, they were also part of the other side of the circle, the Society of the Elect, the inner party, that did not believe in anything remotely close to liberal values, democracy, or any of these catchphrases and slogans that they used. Russell is a proponent, as we said, of a radical depopulation agenda. And this book is very important because he explains how that will come about, potentially. So the book begins by discussing the notion that what happened in the Enlightenment and in the Darwinian Revolution is that the world was divested of meaning and purpose. There's nothing inherently in the world that has purpose. Purpose is something that humans construct as a kind of social construct, as a made-up subjective thing. It's not something that's discovered. Things don't have purpose. They just do what they do. Right? So an acorn becoming a tree is just what it is. There's not a purpose that the acorn has within it. So the rejection of all ancient and medieval and metaphysical ideas is something that Bertrand Russell says was crucial to the modern world. And clearly that would also mean the rejection of the notion of any kind of God. So what's the new religion? Who are the patron saints of the new religion? Well, it's the so-called scientists, which is interesting, though, because he comes up with a sort of a hall of scientists series of saints, as we said last time, people like Galileo, Kepler, Darwin, right? Which is weird because many of those people had theistic views as well. So they don't exactly fit this narrative of atheistic materialism that Russell believes in. But we'll set that aside because he says that really science is grounded in the observation of the world and coming to conclusions on the basis of those observations. And it doesn't have any values. So wait a minute. So science doesn't contain any notion of values, any notion of right and wrong. It just describes what is the case, and it's you figuring out how things work. But if science doesn't have any values and can't give us values, how are we going to have values in this world? Well, according to Russell, it's going to be the scientific elite that will also tell you the values. And so we come to ideas that come out of the same British Royal Society elites like Bentham of utilitarianism. Utilitarianism usually goes along with these kinds of atheistic materialist philosophies, because the idea is, well, I guess the best we could come up with is just maximize everyone's pleasures. But there's no real reason. There's no way that we know exactly what that means. How do we quantify pleasure? What are the pleasure points, right? Do you get 50 pleasure points and I get 20 pleasure points? And there were actually utilitarians who thought they could come up with a moral calculus. And so eventually it became evident, and by the way, Bentham is the same guy who was a PEDO, and he came up with the idea of the panopticon, so the centralized surveillance system inside of a prison, which would be the model for total information awareness nowadays. and that's all going – it's all concomitant. All these things go together in terms of this ideology. So if we can't be managed and engineered in terms of self-surveillance, which is the purpose of the Panopticon, how are we going to be managed? The impact of science on society and his explanation of what the scientism worldview and religion is. And he immediately moves the beginning, as we were saying, to this notion of how do we get values? What are we going to do for the future? He says, well, first and foremost, you need to understand Malthus. He says Thomas Malthus is the guy who essentially gives us the quantification approach to the world and taking his economic theories and applying them to resource wars and population. What does that mean? Well, if there's limited resources, then we're all going to be fighting over the resources, right? That's the way this theory goes. And so if there's too many people, then we got to cut down on the people, right? You've heard Satguru, this guru going around on all the TV shows and talk shows and podcasts. And he says, there are too many people. To reduce the carbon footprints, we must reduce the feet. Get rid of the feet, the people. So even the mainline gurus nowadays promote this exact same Malthusian worldview, which, again, was originally kind of an economic theory, but evolves into a theory connected to social Darwinism, of whom Bertrand Russell is one of the most famous proponents. It's funny, too, because Russell says early on in the first chapter that really we don't believe in egalitarianism. Darwinism disproves egalitarianism. And remember that he has a fiercely racial view as a rabid eugenicist. So Russell, again, is not any kind of egalitarian. And he even admits that in the first chapter, but he plays the part of a liberal humanitarian democracy proponent. And I can't, for the life of me, figure out why people don't understand this or can't figure it out. You know, it's the people in his circles, the same, the Duke of Kent, remember him going on all the TV interviews? And he says, I want to come back as a virus and kill everybody in the interviews. And the woman interviewing him is like, but what do you mean? What do you mean come back as a virus and kill everybody? And he says, well, can't you guess? Can't you guess what I mean? I mean, kill everybody, come back as a virus and kill everybody. What exactly do you mean? What does that mean? What does it mean? He says what it means. All of these people say what they mean. Every one of them writes books saying what they mean. Now, what dupes everybody right away is the liberal cover.
Oh, well, he was part of the democratic society. He believed in democracy. He believed in liberalism.
That's not a thing. It's not a real thing. Have you not figured this out? That's a cloak. And the same people who run the world now use the same cloak. Somebody was just showing me a photo. It was so bizarre. I don't even know how to interpret it. The elites at Davos go through a ritual sort of hazing process where they pretend to be refugees and they crawl around on the ground and they have soldiers barking at them so that they get the experience of a refugee. I mean, it's probably just a photo op, right, to make it look like they care about the refugees, they care about the people. Meanwhile, they say, well, let's kill everybody. How can we more effectively kill everybody? No, they care about the people. So Bertrand Russell begins his book with liberal order. We're liberal democratic denizens of scientism, with scientism. But then he says in the very first chapter that if Darwinism is true, then there's no egalitarianism. Some people are more evolved than other people. I mean, what's the title of Charles Darwin's book, right? The Origin of Species, The Favored Races of Man. Okay, so the very title of the book presupposes the idea that some people are not evolved and others are. He goes on in the next chapter and says, well, how are we going to erect a fair, loving global government? Because he says that the scientific process and scientific technique are going to have the potentiality to erect a technocratic order that will become a nightmare dystopia. So he says it's scary what they can do. They're going to do all these crazy things, and he's going to list them. And who do you think he picks as the guy that is the bad version of this? Hitler, of course, right? Hitler. So Hitler's the bad guy, which he is, but he says it's not the modus operandi of what Hitler had going. He just did it all wrong. He just should have put on a pink sweater. He should have put on rainbows, right? He should have done obeisance to liberal cover, and there would have been no problems with his views, right? Aside from the choosing the Teutonic Germanic idea as somehow like the ultimate, most evolved form of the race or the species, right? Well, the only difference is that Russell says, no, it's actually the Anglo-Saxon English citizen, the Lord and Ladies of London. They're the most evolved. It's literally the exact same philosophy, just a different group. But he says, what we're going to do is tweak this, where we don't pick one race. Who cares about races? We're just going to pick amongst the different people groups the most elite, the most wicked, the highest IQ, the most scientifically advanced amongst all the people groups, and we don't really care about the so-called races. And we'll make them kind of the future class that goes into the future, and everybody else will have to come to us, the scientific elite, and you'll have to prove why we should let you live. George Bernard Shaw says the exact same thing, part of the same Fabian Socialist Society. And so he says, what we're going to have to do is stoke fears. How can we scare everybody into accepting our plan for global government and a liberal technocracy, a liberal world order? He says, first thing we got to do is come up with threats to the entire planet, planetary global threats. What did Noah, Yuval, Harari, Novocaine, Yuthyphro, Ferrari, what did he just say the other day? It's a global threat, climate. We're going to have to kill everyone. You don't have free will. He's saying literally what Bertrand Russell said 100 years ago. There's no free will, but by the way, we have to stamp out free will. Well, how are you going to stamp something out that doesn't exist? And by the way, in other interviews, just like Bertrand Russell, Harari contradicts himself as well. He says, in the future, there would be choices that are made at the top by the scientific elite, and then it will filter down, and then you will be ruled by the AI. There will still be a human equation here at the very top. They will make choices for you, and then you will be governed by the AI. And then he says, there is no free will. No one will make choices. You don't have that. That's gone. That's old. This is gaslighting, right? This is just lying in your face, outright contradicting. I mean, in one video, he says, there is free will among the elite who will make the decisions for you. And then there is no free will. No one has free will. That's an illusion. Okay. So again, basic fundamental contradiction at a very obvious prima facie level. Russell says that first thing we got to do, and this is what he's writing in the 50s, is he says, we got to figure out ways to destroy Russia. Russia. Yes, he says, because the Russian nation, he says, has the ability to, if they grew in population and if they were able to maximize their resources, because it's such a resource-dense country and so vast, they could potentially be a challenger or dominate the Anglo-UK degenerate empire, perfidious Albion. So he says we have to stop them at all costs. And he says, that's why I really like the way Bolshevism and Stalinism have had such a disastrous effect on the Russian people. Now, he eventually doesn't like what Stalin does during the Cold War. And, you know, when Stalin rejects Marshall Plan A, this kicks off the Cold War. So I'm not trying to say it's oversimplified this as if Bertrand Russell was always a proponent or a fan of Stalin and his actions. But originally, as we saw in last week's book, Scientific Outlook, at that time, writing in the 20s or 30s, he liked it. He's like, oh, I actually like the Bolsheviks. I like what they're doing because they're destroying and putting Russia under a scientific government. It's a scientific experiment. And he says, really, all this means is just get the population down. That's it. That's the only thing that we're concerned with. Do whatever is possible to get Russia's population down. And he says in this book, why? Because we don't want a competitor to the enlightened, evolved Anglo-Saxon man.
Next coming up is David Icke. He's going to connect the dots on a lot of this stuff. And he's going to refer to some articles and stories and stuff like that, and so on and so forth, and tie all of this New World Order, fake pandemic and all this stuff together. And then if we have time, I'll end with some short clips from Tucker and from other sources. But here we go with David Icke.
Well, I'm going to do a few stories at the start today relating to COVID. Remember that? And the idea that it's gone away and the whole foundation of what it sought to impose has gone away is something I strongly suggest should be avoided, because it hasn't. And what we are now going through is a period when a lot of it has been rolled back, and a lot of people are kind of running for the hills who were involved in the catastrophe that unfolded, trying to avoid responsibility for the catastrophe that they were fundamentally part of. But in the background, it's still bubbling away. And it's a card that has not been played for the last time. That is for sure. So I'm going to start with this story. It's an article by Professor Mikhail Chosudovsky. And it's looking, well, I'll give you the headline. It says it all, really. Biggest lie in world history. The database is flawed. There never was a pandemic. The COVID mandates, including the vaccine, are invalid. Now, it's interesting that I read that headline this week when those points were being made in the spring of 2020. And I was getting a lot of abuse for making them, but now they are seen to be quite blatantly true. And again, you know, it's so important that if you believe something and you've established something to the point where you can see that actually it's valid, it's so important that we don't be intimidated or frightened into not saying it. Because otherwise, what you're doing all the time is seeing things in retrospect, which a lot of the time is all you can do because the information doesn't come out at the time. But a lot of things you can see at the time, but if you stay quiet about them, it's retrospective. So it has no impact at the time. And putting that out in the spring of 2020 did have an impact on many people, in the sense that they were able to look at what was happening from another perspective, and not just the one being given to them by, well, not only the mainstream media, but great chunks of the alternative media that was also buying, while in a different way, much of the official narrative. So what Chosudovsky does here is go through all the different parts of the hoax in retrospect, and details why they were invalid. He talks about the central role played by the PCR test, how the entire database of COVID-19 confirmed cases is invalid because the test is invalid. He talks about fake data, how 465 million so-called confirmed COVID cases have no validity. He talks about the pandemic treaty and the QR verification code in terms of a stepping stone towards total technological control of human life. And, you know, this World Health Organization treaty, pandemic treaty, they're calling it, is absolutely vital to where they want to go. And it's also vital to understanding what's actually happening. Because the idea is, and the idea always was, as I've said in the books, to create the World Health Organization through the Rockefellers in 1948 as part of the UN, and to make it eventually the dictator of world health response and policy. Now, you've seen that happen in the years of COVID, where so much that came out of the World Health Organization, owned by Gates now on behalf of the Rockefellers, and it being followed by the vast great majority of countries in the world. But they want now to go a step further and have a full-out treaty in which that becomes agreed officially that that's what happens from now on. So whoever controls the World Health Organization controls global health policy and response. That's the game, and that's why this treaty is in train. He talks about an electronic ID linking everything to everything of each individual, records of health, banking, personal and private, etc. And he quotes various people like this one, a worldwide digital ID system in the making, the aim of the World Economic Forum and of all central banks is to implement a global system in which everyone's personal data will be incorporated into the central bank digital currency network. So all these things are all obviously connected. He talks about the fake, or indeed in this case, ridiculously low numbers of, quote, COVID-19 confirmed cases that were used to launch the claim that there was a pandemic. Where did that come through? The World Health Organization. He says that in January 30th, 2020, there were only 83 cases in 18 countries, and only seven of them had no history of travel to China. There was no scientific basis to justify the launching of a worldwide public health emergency international concern. And so it goes on. It's a fraud. There was no pandemic on March 11th, 2020. Well, yeah, all of that is true, but it's in hindsight and retrospect. The fact is that it was bloody obvious at the time it was happening. And going on from that, and in this whole vein of running for the hills, it weren't me, Gov, is this headline. Why more and more experts say lockdown didn't prevent people dying of COVID and call it a monumental mistake on a global scale. That means the mistakes you made, we didn't make them. Yeah. It was a simple instruction to the British people, said the Prime Minister. You must stay at home. With that somber televised address shown on March 23rd, 2020, 2 years ago last week, the country was plunged into its first lockdown. After weeks of surging infections and horrified by the staggering scale of hospitalizations in Spain and Italy, all shown to have been fraudulent crises since. The government had concluded there was no option but to issue an unprecedented order to curb the growing pandemic. It was following the science, after all. And the consequences for lockdown are now becoming absolutely obvious. And they were obvious at the time in some examples given here. The government had issued its most draconian stay-at-home order, a legal mandate that permitted people to leave their homes only for specific purposes, to shop for basic supplies for medical purposes, for exercise, for work, essential work. This lasted 7 weeks and led to some of the most heartbreaking and damaging moments of the pandemic. Dying patients said goodbye to loved ones via a video call. Women gave birth without their partners. Mental health issues, particularly to the young, began to take root. Reports of domestic violence rose dramatically as women were trapped with their abusers. And it went on and on and on. And the death toll, never mind the psychological toll of lockdown, is impossible to exaggerate. But then we come to people like this. Is a lady called Devi Sridhar. Now, she was one of the big lockdown fanatics who's now somewhere in a high place among the trees. And the headline of this article is, "Don't let the lockdown hawks rewrite history." That's exactly what they're trying to do. The past 2 days have seen sorties from scientists desperate to shore up the lockdown version of history. Lockdowns were necessary, and anyone who disagrees does not care about society or equality. This version of history is so fraudulent that it cannot be allowed to triumph. Writing in The Guardian yesterday, Devi Sridhar, Miss Lockdown, asks, why can't some scientists just admit they were wrong about COVID? Why indeed? Sridhar notes that scientists have divided into opposing camps, taking particular pandemic positions, eventually building a base of followers that organize around the position and defend it vigorously. She just doesn't seem to recognize that this neatly describes her own approach. And she's not alone. There's loads of people doing this now. Sridhar's piece is a craven attempt to rewrite history by claiming that the zero COVID position was only ever intended for the pre-vaccine era. Can this be the same Sridhar who said in a New Statesman interview in January 2021 that the better option is to eliminate the virus even after vaccines have started to be rolled out? Or who tweeted in June 2020 that the fastest way to get economy and normal life back is to push for a zero COVID Britain? Clear virus, build domestic economy. Still, as far as Sridhar's concerned, if anyone got anything wrong, it wasn't her. And there's people going to be joining her in the high places among the trees in relation to this COVID fake vaccine as well, as more and more and more evidence comes to light of the devastation that it has caused to life and the health of those surviving what is in those vials. Now, I mentioned about COVID not going away. We're in a stage here. And remember how it came out of China. Well, the hoax came out of China. And if you look now, it's almost like deja vu. China announces another massive lockdown. A COVID outbreak in Shanghai prompted Beijing's swift response. Some 26 million residents of China's economic capital of Shanghai will be confined to their homes as Beijing imposes a massive citywide lockdown in a bid to maintain a zero COVID policy. Now, zero COVID is insane, A, because if you haven't got a virus, and I saw another brilliant documentary this week demolishing the idea that there was one. If you haven't got a virus, then where do you get zero COVID from? You've got it anyway. But you've got a blank sheet of paper in which you can make it do whatever you bloody like because you don't have to respond to it. Public perception has to respond to what you say is it. So to control the growing outbreak, claimed, the lockdown will be accompanied by a new round of mass testing across the city. The more people you test with a test not testing for the virus, the more cases you get. And so what's happening? Groceries will be delivered and left at checkpoints. All non-essential businesses in Shanghai will close their offices, making employees work from home, those who can. China's authorities are free to use public health measures such as mass testing, contact tracing, and lockdowns in order to stop community transmission of the virus as soon as it is detected. So it's all kicking off again in China, and I saw it. South Korea was going through something similar the other day. And this is Patrick Vallance in Britain, the chief scientific advisor to the government that's advised lockdown all the way through. Colt Ohn, this is, I wrote this headline, you'll guess. Colton Valance in dire warning that COVID is evolving rapidly. We may need to ramp things up. The government's chief scientific advisor, Sir Patrick Valance, is this dumb and dumber act with the chief medical officer of England, Christopher Whitty. Patrick Valance has issued a dire warning that COVID is evolving rapidly, adding that measures should remain in place to be able to ramp things up again if needed. He was speaking to the Science and Technology Committee, House of Commons, and following a steep rise in COVID cases, tested positive with a test not testing for the virus. Sir Patrick was asked how important advice from SAGE, this lockdown supporting science group advising the government, was in the proposals. The expert confirmed SAGE clearly played a big part, but before adding his own remarks on the current situation. He said, this virus has not gone away. It's not going to go away. It's going to be circulating human virus for as long as we can see forward. And it hasn't stopped evolving. It's quite an unstable period. So the virus is changing very rapidly. And it's not, it's got quite a lot of space to evolve into. Evidence for a single syllable of any of that. Sir Patrick, nil. Nil! It's not a foregone conclusion that evolution to increase growth and transmission, which is what the virus does, evidence for that? Nil! Necessarily is associated with reduced severity. Sir Patrick also noted that three things were essential to adopting a living with COVID approach. Being able to monitor how it evolves, make it up. To protect vulnerable both physically and through vaccines and antivirals. More and more fake vaccines killing more and more vulnerable people. And having the capacity to be able to operationally ramp things up again if you need to do that, this is crucially important. So it ain't gone away. And another thing they are increasingly needing is some way to explain away the consequences of their fake jabs, because they've been murdering people. These people have been murdering people around the world, these people in authority, the murder. Once you realize that fake vaccines you are telling the people to have and try to make them mandatory, even. The more you know that they're killing people and creating health destroying for life health problems, then if you keep pushing them, pressing them, telling people to have them, that's murder by any definition.
He goes and says that if you advise people to take the vaccine, you're killing them. So I'm not advising anyone to take the vaccine, period. It calls up the spike protein at a very, very high rate, and the spike protein does the real killing. So you've got to really stay away from this. And they have pretty well mind-washed people into taking this vaccine. But it's never been a vaccine. Next coming up is a interview that Tucker Carlson had with a young man that asked some hard questions of Brian Stelter on a panel discussion about fake news. Boy, that's hilarious. Here we go with that interview.
Well, CNN's chief eunuch, in the final days he's working at CNN, thought it'd be a good idea to speak to college students about disinformation. One student noticed the obvious. Wait a second, pal. You're America's chief disseminator of disinformation. So, from our irony files, this is like one of the greatest stories ever. So the University of Chicago's Institute of Politics and the Atlantic Magazine just hosted a conference, no self-awareness whatsoever, entitled Disinformation and the Erosion of Democracy. So they say they invited all of your favorite purveyors of disinformation and exponents of censorship. Barack Obama, Jonah Goldberg, Ann Applebaum, and of course Brian Stelter. There was no IQ bar, apparently. What the speakers didn't count on, the expected hours of just bloviating, is that there are still a couple of kids at the University of Chicago who are awake enough to say, wait a second, what are you talking about? disinformation? Here's one exchange.
You've all spoken extensively about Fox News being a purveyor of disinformation, but CNN is right up there with them. They pushed the Russian collusion hoax. They pushed the Jussie Smollett hoax. They smeared Justice Kavanaugh as a rapist, and they also smeared Nick Salmon as a white supremacist. And, yes, they dismissed the Hunter Biden laptop affair as pure Russian disinformation. All the mistakes of the mainstream media, and CNN in particular, seem to magically all go in one direction. Are we expected to believe that this is all just some sort of random coincidence, or is there something else behind it?
I think you're describing a different channel than the one that I watch. But I understand that that is a popular right-wing narrative about CNN.
It's a popular right-wing narrative. Never trust anyone who uses the term narrative, by the way, just for the record. Christopher Phillips is the man you saw in that clip. He's a freshman at the University of Chicago. He joins us tonight. Mr. Phillips, thank you for joining us. What possessed you to confront these purveyors of disinformation?
Hi, Tucker. Thank you so much for having me on. It's an honor. You know, the way I've always been is to search for truth and ask questions to, you know, sift through the lies and find out what's really going on. So myself and two of my colleagues at the Chicago Thinker, the University of Chicago's premier publication, Evita Duffy and Daniel Schmidt, we three went to this conference. And, you know, we see right when we come in a ton of people, a ton of legacy media employees whose entire careers have been spreading disinformation. Those are the people who are telling us about how to avoid disinformation. So, you know, I hear Brian Stelter, and he talks for 30 minutes about how Fox News is this huge purveyor of disinformation. They're the enemy of the people. And then I come up and I say, wait a second, run that back, because actually CNN, from my, what I've seen at least, is probably 10 times the purveyor of disinformation that you claim Fox News to be. And, you know, he didn't really have a great answer for it.
Well, I did, you know, some of the examples that you threw at him, you know, are subjective. I agreed with your take on it. But some of them were just objective. Like, CNN did dismiss Hunter Biden's laptop as Russian disinformation. That kid's on camera doing it. Wouldn't it have been better if he would have said, yeah, we got, you know, I got that wrong. You know, I'm sorry about that. Wouldn't that have worked?
Gosh, I mean, you know, to tell you the truth, I didn't exactly expect him to hand over the keys and say, you know what, we're corrupt. Go ahead, Chris, and make CNN the truth. But, you know, I did kind of expect him to say, you know, we retracted those stories and we apologize for saying that. And we always, you know, try to keep a clean record. But there was no apology. There was no remorse whatsoever. It's just, you know, I don't know what news network you're talking about. That's not mine. When in reality, he said these things on CNN. It's all documented.
Yeah, it's hard to have credibility if you won't admit that you make a mistake ever. You know, everybody makes mistakes. We certainly have. But just admit it. So what was the reaction from other students at Chicago to your question?
Well, you know, there's a lot of social pressure to conform to the leftist narrative, to conform to the radical agenda at college campuses. So just working for the Chicago Thinker really is, you know, kind of inviting you to be canceled in a sense. But a lot of people, I have to say, actually really liked my question. They thought it was fair. They thought it was honest, and it was pure journalism, and I respect everyone who told me that. Some people were not satisfied with it, but regardless, you know, I think I did a good thing in asking Brian, you know, what gives as to CNN's bias.
Yeah, and just like, I don't, just touch reality once a day, you know, reassure us that you're not like demented, but he didn't. Chris Phillips from University of Chicago, a credit to your generation. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you so much, Tucker. And everyone needs to check out thechicagothinker.com right now. We publish a lot of stuff on campus craziness. No one else is doing it like we are. So hit us on Twitter and Instagram as well. Hit me at ChrisPTheTruth for more.
I looked at it this morning. It's good. Chris Phillips, thank you.
Thank you for listening tonight. God bless you, each and every one of you. Good night.